It's the Greg Kelly Podcast. Hello, and thank you for supporting us. I am on wrapping up a vacation. It's been glorious, away from the drudgery of work and family and all that stuff. Just kidding. I am with my wonderful family. My wife is in the other room, along with our baby, and all is well. We have been on vacation, though. The drudgery of work, it's not drudgery, but it is a grind, but a joyous grind. I love it. I love doing that show, the radio show and the TV show. And of course, this is great, though, a longer format. You can just talk to somebody, not worry about commercial breaks and all that stuff. I love doing the podcast, and I love that I have a new sponsor, and my sponsor is my guest. And he's not the guest because he's the sponsor, okay? He's the guest because he is an awesome American with an incredible story. And I am thrilled that Chris Vargo will be joining us in a moment. Chris Vargo is a hero. Let's see. He's in his mid-40s, lives outside of Detroit, Michigan, and he has made tremendous sacrifices for his community and for his country. After college, he became a police officer and a National Guardsman at the same time, essentially. And after 9/11, he was activated, so he had to leave the police department and serve in the Air National Guard. He suffered a pretty significant injury. He had to leave the Guard. After recuperation, he was able to go back to police duty, successful law enforcement career, but then had another an accident, a serious one. It took him out of law enforcement and into his next venture, which is pretty cool. It's a t-shirt and sweatshirt company with the most awesome, patriotic, and sometimes politically incorrect slogans all over them. The company is called Freedom Fatigues. You can find them at freedomfatigues.com. I love their stuff. I think you will too. They got a Patriots versus Politicians on one t-shirt, which I like a lot. They got just the American flag on another t-shirt. Oh, here's what I like. I like these hoodies that have 76 on them, 76. A lot of people think that's just a basketball team in Philadelphia? 1776. Is it my imagination, or like no one really kind of associates 76 with our history much anymore? All right, so look, there are a lot of weird things going on in the country right now. Chris Vargo is well aware of them, and he's pushing back and sticking up for America. And he's doing it with his wife and this great company, Freedom Fatigues. I think you're going to like it. I think you're really going to like him. This goes on for a bit because his story is very, very interesting and layered, and I really enjoyed getting to know him. So my conversation with Chris Vargo, CEO of Freedom Fatigues, right now. So I want to get a quick snapshot of some things that are going on right now. Just get your opinion of them. Namely, that woman who threw the hammer thrower. Have you heard about that? Gwen Berry. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I don't even care about her name. I've read the article, and the thing that makes me upset about the media nowadays is, all right, so they focus on what they want to focus on, and you've literally got two women who went first and second, and that's not what the media is talking about. They're talking about this loser who decided that she wanted to make a point to turn around and not face during the national anthem. That's the one you're talking about.
Yeah, and actually, well, maybe you raise a great point, because I know the name of the third place sore loser, but not the first and second place finishers.
Nope, I don't even know the name of the third place. I guess I'm okay there. I probably would know her if I paid more attention to what, you know, when they talk about that kind of stuff on the media, but it's the same thing. I don't pay attention. Like when Kaepernick did the same thing, it didn't. I was just like, what an idiot. You know, you're talking about oppression, and here you are, a multimillionaire throwing a football.
It is amazing. And the quality of the discussion in America publicly is very low and very silly. So look, I want to ask you about one of your products, and then I kind of want to go way back to your childhood. But my favorite thing, well, number one, you guys kind of call attention to the year 1776, which, you know, I don't think anyone, people are losing the association with 76 in our history. Have you noticed that?
I have, and I've noticed that there's a lot of just things that are going on currently, and it seems like it's an agenda. I mean, and if you look at it, I mean, they said it, what, you know, 50 years ago, the only way to destroy America is destroy it from within, slowly get in place, get in, you know, positions of government, and then turn around and let's see. I mean, you can see it now. If you, when you can censor the president of the United States by, you know, the local, or not the local, but the big media, like you get, when they can take that and they can shut down anybody who says something that, even if it's true, and I was hearing that the other day, like you can say something, quote the CDC and the big, you know, the big, whatever you want to call them, the corporate giants will take you and censor you because you repeated something that was actually a fact from the CDC, but because it goes against their narrative, they can sit there and, you know, shut you up.
It's crazy. It really is. Now, some of the products you've got here are my favorite. Okay, the favorite one so far, it's in the women's line. It says it has a definition for woke. And the definition for woke is a state of awareness only achieved by those dumb enough to find injustice in everything except their own behavior. And it says it right on a T-shirt with its with a little guide to pronunciation, the definition of woke on a T-shirt. And it's a brilliant definition. Number one, is this a big seller for you?
You know what, Greg? It's a newer shirt. When I say newer, like within the last probably like month or so, like it came out. So yeah, I mean, and like the way things go, like I've noticed is like we'll get something and sometimes you think it's going to be a hot seller and then it sits there for a little bit and then all of a sudden it starts catching on. And then it goes like, and then it'll start going. So yeah, that one's actually caught on, you know? So yeah, it is moving, like I would say, like compared to other shirts. I mean, it's hard to say, but yeah, I would say it's in the top shirt right now, just because people are eating it up and getting it while they can.
Where did you get the definition?
That would be my wife, who and I. Most I have to give all the credit to her, because she was the one like who came up with that actual definition. We have multiple definitions and then she'd run it by me. I sit there and say, I don't know, I think we need to change it. And I was like, all right, let's tweak it this way, or let's just leave it how it is. And that one there, she showed it to me and it was like, I'm like, yeah, that's perfect. It basically spells it out exactly how it is. So
here's another T-shirt. It says offensive. It's a T-shirt. It has the word offensive on it. And there's the definition, adjective and a pronunciator. An overused term co-opted by fragile pansies to describe when the truth hurts.
Exactly.
This is, again, from your wife?
That would be another, like I said, she's got some really great ideas when it comes to the definition shirts. And I'll tell you what, Greg, with the woke and the offensive, we're actually putting in another shirt that we're having done right now, which is an AR. Basically, we're doing it. It's the definition of assault rifle. And we're kind of making fun of the fact that, you know, that they call anything that's scary looking a gun, they call it an assault rifle, even though you know the definition that nothing out there that you can buy as a civilian is going to be, unless you have the correct stamps and all the correct, you know, the paperwork to do it, you're not going to be able to buy anything that's fully automatic. And it's just so the definition. So we're actually going to take the woke, the offensive, and the assault rifle, and the three of those shirts together, we're going to put them together in a three pack and call it the Triggered Trifecta.
And by the way, the images are just beautiful as well. It's not just all these like kind of really powerful, if you want to call them memes or whatever, but some beautiful images. We'll get to that in a little bit. So, Chris, do me a favor. Where are you right now? Where are you based?
I'm in I guess you could call it Detroit. We're about an hour outside of Detroit, north of.
And you're married with three kids?
Married with three wonderful kids, yes. My one son just turned 13 yesterday, so I've got a teenager.
Where were you born?
I was born here in Michigan, Trenton, actually, which is a small city just south of Detroit.
And tell me a little bit about your family, your upbringing, you your parents. What did they do?
Yeah. See, my mom was a stay-at-home mother, And my father, he worked, he did like human resources for, I guess you would call it the banks back then, the bigger bank companies. He worked human resources and doing that his whole life. And then he retired, and then they live in the same house that we grew up in, you know, a small town America.
And did you have brothers and sisters?
Yep, I did. Yep, I grew up. I grew up with my two sisters that I grew up with that were in my house that I grew up with. And then I had a half sister and then two half brothers.
And I'm sorry, like how did, what happened, half brothers? How so?
That would be a whole nother show in itself. But basically I didn't even find out about my other half brothers until later in life. And, but I knew them my whole life. So like I said, that's like a big,
we'll do another show on that one.
Almost like a Jerry Springer episode. That would be, on that one. But for the most, growing up in the house that I grew up in, with the family that I grew up in, and like I said, my parents, I give a lot of credit to them, just for the, I guess, just pushing you in the right direction. I mean, they were always, strong, strict about doing, getting things done, doing it right. Good grades, getting, the college classes, going to college and making something out of your life. So I ended up, doing a 4-year here at Eastern Michigan University with public administration, law enforcement background for my degree, and went on from there. So yeah.
What did you, you said you majored in public administration. Was it, was that the name of the major?
It was public safety administration was the actual, I guess you would, instead of sociology or law enforcement or anything like that, the actual name on my degree was public safety administration.
How did you come to pick that? And you go into law enforcement and you go into the military. Is that something that you thought of as a kid, as a teenager? When did you start to kind of think, maybe that's for me?
Honestly, it would have been my older sister married a Marine who then moved over here to Michigan. And then he went up to Selfridge, which is a Air National Guard base up here. And he was the one that basically pointed me in the right direction. Like, I don't know if it wouldn't have been for him. I don't know if I would have taken the route that I did. I would have wanted to do it. I would have figured it out some way, shape or form. But being able to have him and just looking up to him as a younger child, he was probably 10 years older than me, obviously. So when you're 10, you got a 20-year-old Marine coming in your house. You're like, all right, this guy's really cool. I want to kind of do what he did. So that's where I give a lot of thanks to my brother-in-law.
What's his name?
His name is Herman.
And is he still, did he stay in the Marines for a career or do you know, and what's he up to now?
Yeah, he just retired. I don't know exactly how many years, let's just say almost 30, if not more. With the Marines, I don't know exactly how many years he did, probably 10. And then he did probably 20 something plus with the, he did it out of the Michigan Air National Guard. He was, he worked on aircraft. He was a F-16 mechanic. He worked on them. And then when he was in the Marine Corps, he was on a CH-53s. And, he just retired out of the Toledo Air National Guard base, as a senior master sergeant E-9.
So, all right. So you start thinking about this as a 10-year-old, as a kid, and you get to college. Did you enroll in the National Guard while you were in college or after college? How did that work?
I did. I did one semester of college, and then I took a semester off, went through boot camp, did all that, and then went into the Air National Guard, and then I finished up my college degree.
So a couple and things. Then, yeah, go ahead. The Air National Guard, to be honest, I'm military for a long time. But it still confuses me a little bit in terms of the obligation and the commitment, and because sometimes you hear about guys working, 1 week in a month, and then you can be full time National Guard, and there are lots of different ways to do it. I think, right?
Yeah, there is. There's Selfridge is a full time active duty guard base. I guess you could call it it's an active duty, AGR. And they have full-time employees at work. Like basically, they, when I was there, they called it Department of Defense. So like they've worked through the Department of Defense and they've worked full-time, whatever it was, security on the base, or they worked full-time, whatever they did it as a full-time Air National Guard career. And yeah, you have your 2 weeks, you know, 1 week in the month, 2 weeks a year. And then on top of that, I've noticed when I was in there, it was a lot of times you were always getting, like anytime anything was going on, you were like, you would get activated. Same thing that happened with like after September 11th, I was already working in my department for almost a year. And then September 11th happened. And then it was probably about a couple weeks later, I got the phone call. So get your bags, you know, you're, so I had to leave my department and go away for almost 2 years. Well, and then,
September 11th, how old are you?
I am 44.
Now, if we could do about after that first semester of college, first of all, how did you like college? I mean, was it your thing? Was it something you really liked, or was it something that you like blew off like a lot of other people? What kind of student were you in college?
No, I did get, my father paid for my college, and I've got reimbursed through the GI Bill. And if I didn't get good grades, I didn't get my classes paid for. So it was a matter of, I was a good student, National Honor Society in high school. And the same thing when I got over to college, it was the same thing. I had good grades and studying and getting through it. Just like any college kid, I guess, would, you know what I mean? I mean, it was fun for me, but at the same time, it's, you know, it's school and it's work and it can be hard, but at the same time, I'm glad I did it. And I would never do it differently.
When you, after the first semester, you go to boot camp, you enlist in the Air National Guard, right?
Correct. Yep. And go ahead.
How long is boot camp?
It's regular boot camp. So, the Air Force's is a little shorter than the Marine Corps. I don't know exactly how long it was. Let's say 2 months, I think it was, maybe.
That's a sizable. Was it hard? Was it tough? I mean, what was it like?
I guess coming from an Air Force and from a Marine Corps, if you're going to say, you know how it goes, where you can poke fun at anybody else in different branches. But, I honestly, it was mentally challenging. Obviously, like they make it, it's supposed to be, right? It's supposed to be tough on you. It's supposed to weed out people that can't handle, you know, the way of the life of the military. And yeah, I mean, I took advantage of it when I was there. I loved it. It was fun. I remember, you know, being, you know, it just everything about it. I would definitely do it again. And if you look back at it, yeah, it's kind of a big pain in the butt. You know how it is when you're standing there, you get off the bus and everybody's yelling at you for the whole time you're there. But it was definitely something I would do again.
Why did you choose the Air Force? You mentioned your brother-in-law was a Marine, but you went into the Air Force, Air National Guard. Why the National Guard, Air National Guard?
Well, I think it was being that the base was closed, not close. It was a Metro Detroit base. It was within an hour of where I grew up, and honestly, I think the Air Force was a matter of where I scored on the ASVAB test and the options that I had in order to, like, what I had for job options. You know, when you take the ASVAB, they give you a list of what you're qualified for. So,
and what were you qualified? Like, what did you, what was your specialty? What was your assignment? And after boot camp, what happens right after boot camp, and what is your job?
Yeah, well, so let's see, what was the jobs that I qualified for? There was multiple ones, but I decided to choose. I had a big interest in law enforcement, so that was perfect for me to say, all right, I can take a look at this and see if this is something that I want to do for a career. I can get a good taste of it, you know, with the Air Force and see if it's something that I wanted to do. So that's when I just was like, all right, I'm going to do the law enforcement. So then I went through boot camp, got done with boot camp, came back to Michigan. Went back to school and continued doing my college career as well as my Air National Guard career as well.
So, all right. So you wrap up college. And so it's what, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year, right?
Correct.
And you graduate from college in what year?
I graduated from college in, I think it would have been 2000.
The year 2000. All right. And
it was the end of 99. And then I started the police academy Here, you got to do the academy. I don't know how it works in other states, but I'm sure they got different types of academies that you have to go through. So when I finished up my college, I put myself through the police academy. And then I ended up working at a department here just outside of Detroit for almost 20 years.
Wait, I'm sorry. I got hurt. What do you mean you put yourself through the police academy?
There's if you go, like some departments will sponsor you and put you through, and like you already got a job, so they're putting you through the academy. They stopped doing that 20 some years ago. They used to do it to everybody. They'd bring you in, hire you, and put you through the academy. I made myself available for the departments by putting myself through. There was a lot of people that did it, but there's also, at the time when I went through, there was people that were being put through by the county sheriff or by different departments that were putting the person through and paying to have them go through the academy. I just put myself through.
So again, like a police academy will do regional work. Like you could be a local cop in Lansing or a city cop somewhere else, and they all go through the same state-run academy, right?
If you, well, sort of, the state police in Michigan go through their own state academy. Anybody else, there's private academies that they run through different colleges that they have where you can go to different academies. Like just here in Metro Detroit, there's two academies that are within an hour of each other.
So did you have to pay?
Yes, I did.
How much is the academy tuition?
Oh, I'm not really, I couldn't tell you exactly, but I mean, just typical. It wasn't
crazy.
It wasn't outrageous.
And the police academy life. Do you have to live at the academy, or is it like, you know, 24/7, or is it just like long days? You live at home.
It's long days. You can live at home. I actually stayed up at the academy on the campus itself in a dorm, just because my drive was so far away, because I ended up taking an academy that was further away from my house because it was a sooner academy. You know what I mean? So I drove a little bit further to go to an academy that was starting sooner. And I went to one and I just stayed out there during the week. And I mean, I didn't have to. If I needed to come home, I could come home. It wasn't like it wasn't anything like, I don't know. It was kind of, they were trying to make it like militaristic, you know, with the way that they did things, but it was nothing like in the military. But for the people that weren't in the military, they were like being yelled at and told what to do. It was kind of funny.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
To see them getting treated the way they got treated. But I was laughing because it was on a scale of like 1 to 10 of how it was compared to even the Air Force. It was like a 1.
And you know what I mean? How long was the academy?
Let me think. Sorry. Geez, Greg, you got, let me think. Let's say 3 months.
3 months. And all aspects of law enforcement, from law to how to arrest somebody to riot control, right? Is it kind of like the full on, this is everything?
Everything. Down to shooting, first aid, you name it, you know, procedure, policy, law. Yeah, a lot of law, obviously. But
hey, there's some people talking right now about making the police academy, police training, much longer, a year. That's a proposal that's been floating around for a little while. It may sound great. I think it's totally impractical, and it's ridiculously expensive, and I don't think it actually makes a better police officer. But have you heard about that, and do you see any merit in that?
I don't see merit in a lot of things that are going on, especially when it comes to law enforcement. I mean, there's like the whole defunding and getting rid of police. I mean, it's
well, that's insane. We agree. I mean, but if the academy were longer, is there any benefit in that?
Honestly, no, because you're going to, the academy is only going to teach you so much. You can only give somebody so much information. You've really actually got to get out there and get behind the wheel and actually like go out and do things. It's always going to be different when you do it firsthand as opposed to what they teach you in a book or in a classroom. Everything changes. Any situation, like they call them routine traffic stops. There's nothing routine about anything as a traffic stop. Any traffic stop could go south in a hurry, and you know, anything, any situation could go south in a hurry. So there's nothing routine about anything.
Yeah, no. So look, you get done with the academy, and how do you get hired by the department? What department hires you?
So I worked for a department that I didn't even know like even existed. Cause like I said, I grew up south of Detroit, and then there's an affluent city outside of Detroit called Bloomfield. There's different areas, like there's Bloomfield Hills, Bloomfield Township, Bloomfield Village.
That's where isn't Romney from Bloomfield?
I would assume so. I mean, that's where in Michigan, if you play for like a sports team, and you're one of the big ones, your house is somewhere in Bloomfield, most likely. That's just outside of Detroit. Yeah, it's the fancy area around here.
Is that where Cranbrook is, the private school?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So, I'm sorry, I interrupted. You got hired by the you were saying the Bloomfield Police Department. You didn't know existed or something like that. Go ahead.
Well, I knew the city was there. I just didn't know about the department. And when you're in the academy, they send people from the departments to the academies. If they're looking for hiring people, it's obviously it's the best place to go to look for new hires. And they came and talked to us, and they were one of a few departments in Michigan that required a 4-year degree. And here I had a 4-year degree. So I was like, all right, I'm going to take advantage of that. And plus it was in an area that was not too far from where I was looking at living. So that just kind of worked out. I put in my app, went and did the test, and ended up getting hired. So it kind of worked out.
How many
perfect,
people
actually?
Yeah. So, and by the way, it's a nice community.
Yeah, very much.
How many members of the department?
I would say, let's just say, including like detectives, captains, everybody, all the way through 70.
70 or so. So,
yeah.
And you start off, you're a rookie police officer. How do you like the job?
I loved it. I mean, it was absolutely wonderful. It was great at that point in time. It was different back then. It seems it's funny because it was only, 20 years ago, but it was different back then.
What do you mean it was different? I mean, I have an idea, but how was it? What was it like back then?
Things were different back then. People respected, it seemed like you had a little bit more respect for people. I don't like when you asked me the question about training officers more, obviously there are areas in this country where people are going to need more training, but overall, I don't believe that. I think that that's the case. I think the problem is the people. I mean, the people have zero respect. People blame the officers for different situations, but I mean, my thinking is, why are you out at 2 o'clock in the morning with a gun running around in a major city? You know what I mean? That's the problem. The problem's not necessarily with law enforcement in my mind. It's more along the lines of how people are being raised and how they're being taught to talk to the police, how they're taught to talk to authority. There's zero respect for anybody in authority. It doesn't matter if it's police or the person standing behind the counter at a local, gas station. People have zero respect.
That's very powerful. The problem is not the police, it's the public. I mean, yeah, that just resonates, and we see it firsthand. You know, my father, who's in law enforcement, was in law enforcement, had a very successful career, and
He was a commissioner, correct?
Correct. 12 years at the NYPD. But it's one thing that civilians and lawmakers will always throw around: training, more training, 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 training. It's a catch-all, and it's not necessary. It's really not the answer. Yes, and just like you said, you can only do so much training. And it's a word they throw, but what you just said about the public. So what were you doing? What was most of your job made up at Bloomfield? It's an affluent town, although even affluent towns have crimes, have murders, and you mentioned traffic stops, anything can go wrong. So just give us a sense of what it was like day in and day out being a police officer.
It was neat because going to an office, that was one of my things. I was like, so you go to an office, you sit at a desk, you deal with your tasks that you're given throughout the day. And it's pretty much, if you do that, you're going to pretty much have the same routine. The thing about going into work, into law enforcement, you can make your day however you want. It's almost you pick your own adventure book, you can sit there and say, all right, what are we going to do today? Can we do this? Can we do that? We're going to get into this, or we're going to go in and just kind of just chill. I mean, there's some days when you go in and you just kind of, all right, we're just going to see what happens, take the calls as they come. And, but overall, I mean, yeah, it was just, your typical law enforcement. I mean, like you said, it was a more of an affluent area outside of Detroit, but we bordered, you got different cities around you that are also higher crime rates, and then being an affluent area, people come to the affluent area to, rob, break into houses and steal from the, jewelry stores and everything, your typical stuff that you get, you get your alarms. Every house in the city had an alarm. So you'd get, you get a ton of alarms that you calls that you'd have to handle.
Typical stuff though, every case for a civilian. I mean, we don't think about it very much, but I was driving through here. I happen to be in South Florida in a particularly affluent town. And I heard, there's not too much crime. Occasional cars get stolen, drunk drivers, domestic incidents, and even that just caught my eye or ear. Domestic incidents, when you're going into a house, I don't care if they're affluent or poor, where there's like a horrible argument and you've got to get into the middle of it. Did you ever find yourself in that kind of position?
Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, you're showing up. I mean, first off, so like if somebody's calling you, for the most part, it's never. You're never really called. I mean, you're not being called to change a light bulb, for somebody, or to go to their house and do something. You're being called because they're normally in need of something. And when you show up at a situation, it's usually heated. Yes, it's always, and then trying to separate it. And you're at that moment in time, you have to take, a situation, de-escalate it, and basically sort things out. So, I mean, yeah, any situation could work out simple, or it could turn into a big cluster.
A normal person walking into such a situation, it's kind of unthinkable. And this is your day in and day out life. 20 years ago, I remember someone pounded on my door. It was 20 years ago. And I'm like, what? I opened the door and it was a woman and she was totally distraught. Her son was freaking out in the next room. And she wanted me to help. And apparently they had accidentally painted the door shut and he was trapped in there. And I actually kicked the door open. And I was like, there was no time to call the cops, or it didn't seem like it. It was just so chaotic. And I'm still telling this story 20 years later. And it was just one little thing that you guys kind of encounter all kinds of crazy stuff every single day. It's just kind of wild. The things that you take as routine, I'm thinking, are pretty wild, and you could fill a book with your stories.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I'm sure, like you said, you go to different areas where they're backed up calls, like big cities, Chicago, New York. I mean, it can be a lot more chaotic, but at the same time, I think all of our guys in blue, guys and gals in blue, anywhere you go, their jobs are stressful, and we need to look out for them. That's part of what, that's part of what this is all about.
So how are you managing with the guard and police work? How does that work?
It was going fine until September 11th happened. And then that was when I got basically everybody, I got called away from work. And then as I was like basically brand new rookie on my own, first year on the job, and then I had to leave, and it was all new for them. It was new for me too. So like they didn't know what to do. So we're trying to figure things out. And, and when I got done with my time away, I had to come back and I had to recertify myself through the state, basically, in order to make myself eligible to go back to work.
But they were a couple things. They were supportive of it, right?
Very much so. Absolutely. Yep.
And do you remember where you were on 9/11, by the way?
Yeah, I was actually in Bloomfield on the job, sitting in my car running radar.
And all right.
I was listening to a local. I was listening to a local news talk show, morning show that I listened to. And they just brought up the fact that they said, yeah, some plane flew into the building. I think like everybody, I sat there, I think, wow, it must be cloudy, or, it was a mistake, it was an accident. And then when the second one hit, that was when it was like I'm sure it's the same with you. The lights all started going off and you realize, all right, this is a lot more than just an accidental plane flying into a building.
So, you know, you probably have the sense that you're going to be activated. How long after that were you activated?
It was within a month, I would say.
And where did you go? What happened next? You're
I got
activated.
my.
You actually have to put on the nation's uniform. You're back in full time. You're a full time Air National Guardsman at this point.
Yep, I went up. Basically, it was active duty. They take you from guard status to active duty status, and then we were called up, went to Selfridge, and we were out of Selfridge and handling whatever they were doing there, and shipping people wherever they were shipping them. And then it was December. It was early December, so I was on my way back to Bloomfield to go grab my paycheck because I haven't set up the direct deposit yet, and some car ran a red light, T-boned me on one of the major roadways up here, which basically put me out of commission. And I had to have some procedures done on my back to get like some small surgeries on my back in order to get it back to normal. And then I didn't want to get a medical discharge, so I basically got fixed. Decided my time was done. I didn't need to reenlist, and I decided to just take an honorable discharge so I could get back into law enforcement and get over the injury, get back to work, and get back into the normal things of life as a civilian.
How bad was that accident? He T-boned you. What kind of, and went through a red light. You know, I think about that sometimes. You go through a red light. I mean, a red light is a big deal. If you go through a
Yeah.
red light, it's the consequences can be catastrophic. How bad was the accident?
It was a bad accident. I mean, my car was totaled, and unfortunately, it hit the front of the car, not my door. Because if it would have hit my driver's side front of the car, if it would have hit my door, I'd have probably been a different story right now. But it was a bad accident, and it was funny because like your adrenaline's going when you get hit, and I got out of the car, refused medical, went home, and then I couldn't even move. Like the next day, I couldn't even like get out of bed. Just from being sore and whiplashed.
But you were able to fully recover.
I was able to had a procedure done on my back, and in order to fix it, get rid of the nerve damage that I was having, and then it was still always damaged. And then I went back to work, and I worked, almost 15 plus years in law enforcement until I got into my other accident, which is basically took the original injuries that I had and exacerbated them and made it. That's where I had to have all the surgeries that took place back in 2016.
Okay, I want to get to that in a moment, but do me a favor. Just you mentioned the running radar, and you find people speeding or whatever. You heard all kinds of excuses when you pull people over, right? I mean,
Absolutely.
they must, and some of them are irate, some of them are terrified. What's the most typical reaction when you pull somebody over?
For the most part, you never really got anybody who really admitted. And if they did, it was an automatic, like, all right, cool. Thanks for admitting that you were wrong. I think I'm just going to let you go with a warning. But you would get people from, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I'm late, to, you're out of your mind, I wasn't speeding. Even though you had them at like, 25 over the speed limit, they'll argue it to court. They'll take it to court and argue it, saying that they didn't do it. So you're going to get just a whole mess of all kinds of different things. I make a joke, like accidents. People, you show up in an accident. I think in 20 some years of law enforcement, you never get two people to give the same story for the most part. Like, especially the person that's at fault, you're always going to get, oh, it wasn't my fault, or oh, out of the whole time I was there, you might have had like maybe three or four people. In that time, you can get like sometimes three or four accidents a day is what you take, and you get these people, none of them will admit that they're wrong. But it's like that's what you deal with. You're always going to get different situations, different stories. So you got to kind of figure it out yourself.
Seeing all those traffic accidents, did it make you drive differently, more conservatively? You say you could see multiple accidents a day. That have an
Well,
impact on you?
yeah, it did. I mean, especially with fatal accidents. I mean, you see what it takes to sometimes the minimal amount that it can take to cause an accident to go completely south. So yeah, it did. I mean, that's another thing too. Like I said before, you don't get the same story from two different people on an accident. That's why you can buy them cheap. I bought a cheap dash camera for my car, my personal cars. I keep them in there. And that way, if something does happen, forbid somebody pulls out in front of me or I cause an accident, it's there. I can show that, I can pull up the video, the audio, and it'll show it. So I like to have that. I think that's part of, like you asked me, like being in law enforcement, what do I drive better? Do I drive safer? Yeah, you try. And at the same time, I like to have the backup of a camera, that way in case somebody says I did something, I can say no. It's yeah. Right here. This is what happened, you know.
And for most of your law enforcement career, when you do these traffic stops, did you have a dash cam, official dash cam video documenting this stuff? Because they were not everywhere in the early 2000s. Did you have them?
We didn't when I started. It was no cameras, nothing. It was basically just, you know, like the old school way of doing things. I loved it when we did get cameras because it was nice to have. Because they're, you know, it's nice to say, hey, no, I didn't say that, or no, I didn't do that. I never had a camera get me in trouble, put it that way. The cameras only, since we put them in, like when after we had them put in, the only thing a camera ever did was get me out of trouble. Like, you know what I mean? Like somebody would say I did this, or somebody would say I said that, and then they would go back and review it. At the time, it was videotapes. You actually had to take a VHS tape and put it in a VCR in the trunk. That's how it started out, and then it went all digital, and then it would download it as you drove past the station. It would actually upload it onto a like a hard drive. But back in the day, they would pull the tapes and look at them, and then they'd come back and say, all right, you didn't say that, they said you did, you know. So yeah, the cameras never got me in trouble. They always got you out of it, and that's the way they should be. Honestly, I mean, that's the majority of law enforcement out there today.
Did you have a partner for the most part, or most part not? I'm guessing not.
No, you pretty much, so yeah, you would have a district, you'd be assigned to a district, and then that district would have a partner, but you would never have a partner in the car for the most part. I mean, they would do it sometimes if they had, like, let's say you had a shift with like extra people on it, they'd say, hey, anybody want to ride, you know, double? And, you know, but it wasn't a very common occurrence. It was mostly you're in your car by yourself. And if there was a call, you know, if it was in your district, you'd go and somebody else would go. And if it was something where they needed like maybe a third or fourth, two people from another district could slide over. So yeah, you're always watching people's backs.
And inside a department, there are 70 guys there, 70 men and women. Do you have to deal with office politics like any institution, whether it's military head office politics? I think, definitely, the media has office politics. It exists also in law enforcement, or maybe not. What's your experience?
I think absolutely. It's just like anywhere you go, you're going to have your typical politics that take place. But for the most part, it was good. I mean, people complain about anywhere you go, you're going to find somebody that can complain about something.
Yeah.
You know, but overall, I mean, the politics never really, they never really bothered me. I guess maybe when you're a patrolman, it doesn't affect you so much as I guess if you're in a position of being like a lieutenant or a captain.
Now, people don't understand that you can go many years, even in whether it's Bloomfield or New York City, and not, number one, not fire your weapon. Firing a weapon is actually pretty rare for a cop. And not even taking your weapon out of the holster. Did you have to... number one, did you ever fire your weapon, and did you ever have to actually, you know, take it out of the holster and point it?
Taking it out of the holster and pointing it, yes. Firing it, no. Other than like putting down deer, that would be and the range. I mean, the only time I ever had to fire my weapon while on duty was putting down animals that were injured.
Yeah, I think my father would say the same thing, by the way. He had to have both scenarios. I don't think he fired it in the line of duty. Can you tell me the one time when you did actually have to withdraw? What's the first incident that comes to mind?
Like a felony stop on a car, when I say felony stop, I mean, it's a stop on a car where, you know, that there's, you know, there's a reason you're stopping this car. It's, but let's just say it was a BOL, be on the lookout for a car that was involved in a homicide. And you find a car that matches that description, you stop it. You're not going to just walk up to the car and have them, you know, get out of the car. You're going to direct them out of the car at gunpoint. And I do remember it was funny because, like, we had just put lasers on our pistols at the time. And it was a foggy night and we had stopped this car. And I remember when we had like three or four different officers ordering the people in the car to get out, and the laser lights going through the fog. I remember specifically just seeing it just dancing around the car. Yeah. I mean, it was it's anytime you have to pull your weapon out, it's a situation that, you know, can be scary. But this one turned out just like they complied, everything. And that's another thing. Like, that's a whole other show in itself. But talking about people complying, if you just comply, the odds are you're probably going to go home or go to jail with a pair of handcuffs on and then see a judge and then go home at some point in time.
Right. Live to see your day in court. I mean, this guy, Dante Wright, who ran, it's now fashionable, if not encouraged by the media, to run from cops, to whip out those cell phones and try to catch them doing something. But as you mentioned, cameras often, show that you're doing the right thing. Hey, what I wanted to ask you about this, what advice would you have in addition to complying when you get pulled over? What should you do? What should a person do? I've heard everything from turn the car off to don't turn the car off to put your hands on the steering wheel. Is there a standard for a driver that they should follow?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Cause like being in law enforcement for 20 years, I do my best to not get pulled over, but every once in a while you'll do something. I can't even think of the last time I did get pulled over, but when you do get pulled over, even as a law enforcement officer, your heart starts racing. It goes up into your throat. You're like, oh my gosh, what did I do? Am I going to get a ticket? And then the same thing, when they walked up there, every time that I've ever been pulled over, I had my hands on the wheel. And the first thing I've always said is I'm armed. I'm off duty. And then they'll say, all right, you know, hey, we stopped you. You're going, you know, five over back there or something, you know? And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, I've never had a ticket. And can you say, is that because you were a cop or is it because you were courteous? I think a lot of it has to do with just being respectful, answer their questions. Don't be, you know, don't be yelling and moving all around your car. You're going to get, you know, if you just sit there and do what you're told, honestly, I think that works for anybody. It has nothing to do with, I guess in my upbringing, it has nothing to do with race or anything for any stop. I mean, that's, people say that they're stopping people or they're being profiled. And I think that that's mostly media basically trying to separate people and make people against each other.
So what happened? You had a very serious car accident, and I believe it was in 2016.
That's correct. Yep.
What happened?
So yeah, I was just it was a nice fall morning. It was October, and just a normal morning, and we got a call of like a cement truck had lost its load on one of our main roads. Like, it dumped cement all over the freeway. So I was in the area looking for it, and then I was driving on the road, and a car had basically took a turn tight, came over into the opposite lane, basically into my lane, and hit me head on as I was coming up to a intersection. And then that was instant. Like, I mean, I knew I was hurt instantly, because it was like, all right, man, that really, really rocked me pretty good. And, it was scary, but at the same time it was like, I'm trying to think of the word I'm trying to think of here, but yeah, it was, I'm trying to think where I lost my train of thought.
No, we're talking about the head on collision, and
yeah,
you knew it was significant. You knew you were hurt. It was bad, but maybe you knew you were going to survive, or I don't know. Tell me.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I knew I was going to survive. You know, the airbags go off, you can't breathe. I mean, that's the typical. I think, typical accidents, like you get in them like that. If you ever had an airbag go off in a car, or when the gas that sets them off, it's hard to breathe inside the car after that happens. And just being in the car and the horn going off and everything trying to, give your location and where you're at. And then all of a sudden, then the ambulance and the fire trucks all show up. And then I was off to the hospital getting, all the testing that they do for you. So then, I mean, because of that accident, I ended up having to have, I was losing, I, well, I had it was a disc in my neck that was bulging and it was compressing my spinal cord, causing nerve damage in my right arm. So they went in my neck and put an artificial disc at C7. That was the first surgery. And then after I recovered from that, I had 3 months of physical therapy, then more physical therapy. Then they went in and did a surgery on my lower back, replaced a disc, two discs in my lower back. And then the third surgery I had was on my lower back, where they went into the backside and put rods in on the backside. So basically three surgeries in a matter of less than 2 years. And then during those surgeries is when the doctor said, I don't know if you're ever going to be able to get back into law enforcement. And I think it was after the first surgery, I was laying on the couch, and that's where the whole idea for Freedom Fatigues came about, because I was just laying there and they told me I couldn't do law enforcement. They're like, and I was like, well, what do I want to do? And I was just sitting there and laughing. I told my wife, I was watching YouTube. I was like, I'm going to start a t-shirt company. She's like, what are you talking about? I said, well, I like t-shirts. I like patriotic t-shirts, and I can't find any out there that are American made. And I'm like, let's just do it. So she thought I was crazy. But the funny thing is, at first we weren't necessarily American made. I wanted a patriotic shirts, and we were doing them with like a direct to garment printing from different companies, and they were just printing on like typical shirts that you'd get from any shirt company out there. And we actually kind of got discriminated against because they didn't like our point of view and necessarily of like what we were about. And it's funny because the company that was doing this was in California. We did a shirt. It was a playoff of the 45 gun, not necessarily the 45 Trump, but they took it as the 45 Trump. And then they downloaded our stuff, raised our prices so high that we couldn't even purchase a shirt and even sell it. We wouldn't have been able to even sell it for what we had to pay for it to even have it done. So at that moment is when we decided, I said, I'm going to do 100% American made everything. And we're going to bring it all here, and we're going to inventory everything ourselves, and we're going to have control of everything. So that way we don't have any sort of, quality issues. So
So that was when, I'm sorry.
that all like kind of conspired. That's when we decided we were going to become an American-made patriotic apparel company.
So the company you were using, you would send your designs to the company and they would have them made in China or Malaysia or wherever, and they were giving you a hard time about the messaging as well, right?
Basically, yeah, they raised our prices so high that we couldn't even. There was no point in even doing it because we couldn't even turn around and sell it. We would have had to sell it for cheaper than what we paid for it. So we would have lost money on every shirt.
And how do you know, like, do they say some of this stuff, I guess, was pro-Trump, 45, right? 45th president. These are pro-Trump, pro-America messages, correct?
Correct.
And how did they say, well, do me a favor, I got to pause for one moment. Did you were able to walk after the accident? You were never, that was never at risk. The doctor said you may not be able to go into law enforcement again, but you could walk, right?
Yeah, I could walk.
Could you run?
No.
And this is 2016 all the way into 2018. You said you were on the couch. You got the idea when you were watching YouTube. But do you remember like the day, the month, the year when you thought, I'm going to start a t-shirt company?
Yeah, it would have probably been, let's see, June of 2017 when I decided. I was like, after my first surgery, I think my surgery was in May, and that was when they kind of told me that like you're not gonna be able to do law enforcement ever again. And I kind of, you know how it is. I looked at it like, yeah, right, I can do this. You're out of your mind. But at the same time, I was like, all right, well, maybe I can't. And what could I do? I love t-shirts. I love hats. I mean, I love sweatshirts. And that's when I was like, all right, I want to have a company that does patriotic apparel and also gives back and brings awareness for the, because with the PTSD for me, I see it in friends and veterans and even law enforcement. But like, it's, people think of PTSD as something that's going to happen from somebody that you have to be in a firefight in the military when there's cumulative PTSD that, you know, people of law enforcement and medics, even like, you know, anybody who's dealing with situations that are, you know, when people are at their worst, it can cause, you know, mental anguish for the person that's, you know, seeing that over and over and over and over again on a 20 or 30 year career. So that's, we try to bring awareness to that, bring awareness to the aspect of, you know, suicide awareness. That's why we partner up with like Blue Help, the organization. We do our 22 Veterans a Day shirt. We like 100% of those proceeds from that shirt, we give back. And a portion of everything that we sell, every shirt, every hat, every sweatshirt, anything that we sell, every week, you know, everything that we sell, a portion of that shirt is going to go to military, police, and fire for some form of PTSD suicide awareness.
Now, that's awesome, by the way. It really is.
Thank you.
Just tell me a little bit about that company that was giving you a hard time. How did you know it was about the messaging, or is it just a vibe you caught, or did they say out loud, you know what, we don't agree with this stuff? And
no, they didn't. They didn't have to say it out loud. It was pretty much, we knew once we submitted the artwork for that design, and then the company went in and downloaded every design that we had off of our drive. And within 24 hours, the price went up like 60% more than what we were paying. You know, so it was like, we figured it out. You know, we knew at that very moment that we were being discriminated against because they didn't like our message.
Did you think about going to another company to do it, or like, you know, there's finding another company, or you decided to do it yourselves, but did you explore it? And I can understand, actually, you know what, screw this. We don't need anybody else. Let's just be self-reliant so we're never in this position again. But did you try to find another company?
Yeah, well, not at that moment. I think before that we had this. So the California company that we had used was probably like our third company that we were trying. So it was like at that moment when they basically discriminated against us for our message, they didn't like it, raised our prices so high. You know, at that moment in time, I was like, all right, you know, we're just going to do this on our own. And we're gonna make it right. And that's. I mean, it was almost like you're standing at the. I remember the moment sitting there going, well, what do we do? We've got all this money invested in this company. Do we sit back and just let this company push us away? Not, you know, we're not raise our prices so high that we can't even stay in business. Or what are we gonna do? And it was, you know, I'm glad my wife was on board, but it was like, I'm like, let's jump in head first. You know what I mean? Like, let's go. We're not just gonna. You know, put our toes in the water. We're going to jump in and dive in. So that's what we did, and now we're just sitting back and hanging on. You know, it's a crazy ride, and it's like it's nothing like they say on the TV. Like, oh yeah, start a t-shirt company. It's easy. You know, you'll be a millionaire in a year. Yeah, no, it's not how it works. And it's a ton of work. It's a ton of time. I mean. But no complaints on my end. I love every aspect of it. I mean, here I am talking to you. I mean, that's kind of cool. You know what I mean? It's like, you know.
You never know where life's going to. You know, when you said, well, now we're sitting back, and I was hoping you were going to say, now we're counting the money.
And you said, sit back. No, not quite yet, Greg. But the beauty of it is the company itself now is funding itself. So when we first started, obviously, we funded it ourselves. And now it's funding itself, which is nice. And it'll be nice to be able to, like you said, sit back and collect some money. That'd be definitely that's the goal, right? You know, you're not going to do anything unless you want to, you know, better yourself monetarily and mentally, everything. So, I mean, all around, I think, you know, it turned out to be, it was almost like a little blessing in disguise. And that's another little thing too. So my daughter, I found out 3 days after my accident that my wife was pregnant with our third. And it was kind of like, you know, we had tried and we had miscarried. So it was like, all right, I wasn't too excited. And now all of a sudden you get told you're having another baby, and she came at like, honestly, the most perfect time. Cause I was going through, I mean, you're going through a rough time. You're being told you're not going to be able to continue your career that you started. So, you know, it was mentally, it was a tough time going through that, just being, you know, you're almost like your identity, you know, you understand it as being a veteran, you know, in law enforcement, your identity, you identify as what you do. And then to be told you can't do that anymore, you know, it was kind of a, you know, it was surreal.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, to be able to push through it and find another way, I think that's what we're doing.
What's your wife's name?
Her name is Ryan, R-Y-A-N-N.
And when did you meet? How did you meet?
High school. So she was 15. I was 16. Let's see. We were in high school. She was a sophomore. I was a senior.
Wow. And you've been together ever since?
We've been together ever since. Correct. Yep.
That's amazing. And how long is the marriage at this point?
Well, that's a, don't put this one on the air. Let me think. 2006.
Okay.
So we're coming up on 15 years of marriage. And then before that, we were together for 10 years. So,
and she is very much a partner in this enterprise. You guys are working from home for the most part?
No, we have a warehouse, which is nice because it's actually only a few miles from my house. That's actually where I'm at now because, like I said, I have a 13-year-old son. We had 10 boys over last night for a pool party, and the house was not an option for trying to talk on the phone. So I came up to the warehouse and here. So yeah, we were out of our house. We were out of our basement, our garage, our son's bedroom, and you know, we moved out of there and into the warehouse, and we're already outgrowing this space. So,
and there's stuff when you start a t-shirt company. I mean, there are a million things you've got to consider that have nothing to do with t-shirts. I mean, like, I don't know anything about t-shirts or manufacturing or cotton or anything. And then distribution and light, all kinds of, like, you find yourself going into all different kinds of directions and learning new things. I guess my question is there something that you really like, wow, I had no idea I had to tackle this in order to sell a t-shirt online, whether it's, is there, does that make sense, my question? You know, it's something just so far afield from what you thought you'd have to do, but you have to do it if you want to do it.
That's a tough question. I guess I'm not really.
You're not really what?
I guess I'm not really surprised by anything that we're doing. I guess the one thing that would surprise me is, like, nothing, I guess it wouldn't even have to do with the shirts part of it, the selling part of it, the inventory and all that, like the whole, that part of it, doesn't surprise me. What surprises me is the people that have time on social media to make comments, when they disagree with something that you, like, you know, they obviously we're going to only, you know, appeal to half the population. And I know which half that we're aiming for, you know what I mean? And I think it's more than half the population is patriots out there. I think, you know, like I said, I think the media portrays it to be making it seem like it's less, but I think there's a lot more people in this country, like me and you, who are patriots and who love this country and hate seeing what's going on right now. And are just, you know, sitting back, just waiting for that. You're almost like waiting for something to happen, right? You know what I mean? You're like, all right, when's something going to happen here, right?
You know, I'm hoping, how would you answer this? Do you make the t-shirts yourself, or do you order them from somewhere else? Where do the t-shirts come from?
So yeah, we have them printed for us. We don't print them. We don't have our own equipment where we print them on. We have a printer that we use that prints our shirts for us on our American-made blanks that we use. So,
I guess you know what I'm hoping for. I would love a company like that first company in California that you mentioned. You know, more people who would be like, look, I don't agree with your message, but I will fight and I will do whatever you can, what I have to get your message out there. Like, if somebody came to you and said, look, we're a startup business. We disagree with you on everything, but we do believe in freedom of speech, and we do believe in American enterprise. And if somebody had a message opposite yours, I wonder, would you be open to that? Would you facilitate that? I guess that's kind of a ridiculous question. I guess I'm just wondering, like, I wish that company in California would have been more agnostic, would have been more like, you know what, hey, we're providing you a service. We may disagree with your messaging, but you deserve a fair price. You deserve, and you deserve our best work. Your messaging is your messaging. It's not ours.
And no, but that's, but you run into that all the time with anybody that's, I mean, you see it with anything on the, I guess, let's use the term on the left. Anytime you see it with, if there's a disagreement or anything like that, they will do whatever they can to, you know, basically, like I said, it was discrimination in my mind. I mean, it was, you raise the prices for somebody so high because you don't like their message. But you know what though, Greg, it worked out for us because it forced us into a position where we are, where we're at today. And I honestly look at it like it was a blessing in disguise. Everything that you have, I think everything happens for a reason. I think like the way that this worked out, I think it basically, because of that, their actions, it basically pushed us to do what we wanted to do sooner than we would have done it, if that makes sense. Because like it was where we kind of wanted to go all along. But when you're starting out a company and you don't have any money, you know what I mean? It's like, what do you do? So,
yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's. I love it. A blessing in disguise. I guess you're making me think as we go forward. And I'm a conservative. I am pro Trump. I liked his style. I liked his message. I'm pro military. I'm pro law enforcement. If I were to encounter, and there are very few basic platforms for us. I mean, now we have Rumble. YouTube obviously leans left. I guess one of my takeaways from this is, and it's not the takeaway, but one of them is, I want to be more open to those on the left who want to promulgate their ideas so long as they don't hurt anybody. Like, I don't know, if Bill Maher or some liberal wanted to put his video up on Rumble, I think they should be able to. And
yeah, I think that any platform, I think you should be able to say whatever you want. You know, I mean, there's restrictions when it comes to freedom of speech, but it, you know, I mean, for the most part, say whatever you want. And if you're the way I am, if I disagree with something that you say, I have the right to disagree with you. It doesn't mean I have to be, you know, it's the same thing. Like I see it all the time with like liberal family members, like they will shun you and write you off just because they feel that you, because of your opinions, they disagree with it. And I completely disagree with everything that they, like some of my family members, I completely disagree with everything that they do, but it doesn't mean I'm going to not talk to them or, you know, like, let's say just unfriend them on one of the social media platforms. I mean, I see that all the time.
Yeah. And let's face it, the left does it more than the right. They do. I mean, I have friends who I totally disagree with, and they have gotten very angry and they have shut me out. And like, I've known, by the way, I kind of had an awakening over the past 5 years. I wasn't always conservative, and they're mystified and they're angry. And I always knew that they're, anyway, I find it, it's disappointing, but we're different from them. So look, all right. So how can we help? These t-shirts are amazing. How many do you have to choose from?
How many shirts do we have to choose from?
Yeah, how many are on the site right now? Actually, do me a favor. Before I go there, what is your typical day like? When you get up and you run a company like this, what does that look like when you get to work? And I guess you're working all the time, but what do you spend most of your time doing?
Well, it's a variety of different things. I mean, let's say shirt wise, let me just see one. I don't know, 70. We probably have 70 some shirts, at least shirts, and that's just t-shirts. And then we have like our sweatshirts, our hats. We do belts that are made here in the USA. It's a company called Grip Six. We use them to make our belts for us. And then that's a thing too. Like so you asked me what our typical day is. Our typical day is like me, I get up early. I'm an early riser. I like to get up early and I like to come into the shop and I like to knock things out, get things done. We'll take care of the orders that come in. And then we have inventory that needs to be inventoried. And we roll our shirts, and fold them. So, I mean, that's our typical day is getting the orders out. And then my wife, she's dealing with, and then on top of that, I'm dealing with social media. She's dealing with emails, and just ads and keeping the website up and current, getting new items out there. I mean, there's a lot more to it than just selling t-shirts. I mean, it is a lot more involved. And that's the thing too, like, you know, that I wanted to tell you too, the whole aspect of what we do as a company, everybody that we use is small American made companies. Like our hats are made, they're not made on a machine. They're basically hand sewn. So it's like something like we order our hats to have them for inventory. Some of them, like we just ordered fitted. So we did a fitted stretch flex fit hat. And I don't know too many other American made companies that make an American made flex fit hats. We made those, and like it could take up to 6 to 8 months sometimes from the time we place our order to get them in. So that's how long it can take us. So you got to kind of be up on things too. So you got to know what to order. Hopefully you're going to order a hat that people love and it sells, so it doesn't just sit on your shelf, right? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, have you thought about, are you studying? Like, are there things that you have to learn, business classes or anything like that, that can help? I guess you're, it's all OJT on the job.
Yeah, basically that's where we're at right now. So, and then, you know, getting the right people in the right positions, and just, you know, moving forward with it. Like I said, it's for us, it's about the whole aspect of everything being like our stickers that we make. Okay. So this is just, it goes to show you the vinyl that we print our stickers on. The company, they never used American made vinyl. So they had to order American made vinyl just to make our stickers.
Wow. That's fantastic. And, is there a long-term goal? Do you have a long, but wait, before I get there, Freedom Fatigues, Freedom, that is a great name. It's just a fantastic name. You, your wife, together, how did that come to be?
I have to say, I can't even, if I think back, that's 5 years ago when I think when we were actually sitting, or 4 years ago when I was sitting down thinking about what we were going to do. And I think it was a collective effort on both of our parts, but I think it was, I would have to say it was probably her that came up with it.
Well, it's an awesome name. And one Thank other you. Thing about social media, you say you're on social media. Is that to get the word out? Is that to, what is your social media strategy? And if you don't have one, that's fine. I don't have one myself. But like social media, what do you do on social media?
Well, see, that's the funny part about it. It's like I've never been a big social media person, but being, you know, the owner of the company that you're on social media, you've kind of got to learn to do things on social media and almost like throw away the, you know, the filter. But at the same time, I've noticed that like my biggest thing with social media is, and it's sad that this is even the case, but it's like try not to post something that's going to get me kicked off or shadow banned from their platform. Cause at that point I'm not big enough where, you know, I don't have a big enough email, you know, list of people that I can just shoot an email out and get sales when I, you know, I rely on that. So I've got to be, it's kind of sad, but I've got to be cautious of what I post to make sure that it's not too, it's funny, it's not too pro-America. Because if you do, I've seen other companies that have posted different things and they end up just getting shut down. I mean, you've seen it. I mean, it's happened to the president of the United States, you know.
It is incredible. So, it is incredible. And the chilling effect that had on you, on me, on countless others, like if they can do it to the president, they can do it to anybody. And
I would love not to have to deal, like even mess with that. I mean, I was all excited when they were looking at getting the new platforms out there for social media. And then when when that gets shut down as well, it's like, wow. You just sit back and you're scratching your head. You're like, but yeah, so social media is about like interacting with and gaining followers and just, you know, and getting your product out there and letting people see what you got. So,
you know, one thing people have told me, well, you know, Twitter's a private company, so they can do whatever they want. Facebook's a private company. They can do whatever they want. And I can't stand it when I hear that. It's they're so big. They're too big. And it's like if Thomas Edison or Alexander Graham Bell, who invented the phone, you know, only gave it to people who he liked and conversations that he agreed with, they were the only ones permitted. Obviously, that would not fly. And the idea that it's that they were private individuals. Well, ultimately, we regulated that stuff because it was too important, and we couldn't just let those guys do it. And I feel like it's a similar moment right now. Can I ask you this? Are you a person of faith?
Yeah, absolutely. Huge. I mean, faith is that's probably one of the biggest parts of my day is the time I take out of the day, either in the morning if I'm not rushing too much, but I try to always make time, but it's always every evening I make time to put myself in the book or get right. So
And you say put yourself in the book, in the Bible. Can you just tell me a little bit about that?
yeah, it's now it's funny because I'm currently doing it's a Bible study where you do you read the Bible in a year. So you have one every day, you have a certain amount of verses that you have to read in order to keep up with it. So, and if you don't keep up with it, the people that are doing it with you can see that you didn't do it. So they know that you didn't do your reading. So you got to kind of keep up with that. So that's, I'm doing that currently right now. And, my wife and I are members of our church, and we get our kids involved. And, and last year was a rough year for everything. So I think right now things are starting to get back to normal here in Michigan. Let's hopefully it lasts like that for, let's hopefully it stays like this, right?
Isn't he a great guy? I have a lot of respect for him, and what a thoughtful individual. This is a great company, made in the USA. And you hear about how that company gave him a hard time. They didn't like the content of the t-shirts. They didn't like what they were saying. Well, in America, you're allowed to say kind of whatever you want, and everybody should really get out of the way when you do so. But no, it's not working out that way. So hey, if you want to order something from Freedom Fatigues, this is a deal, okay? If you go to Freedom Fatigues and you fill out the form, and everyone's ordered stuff online, you'll get to the part where they ask for the promo code, and the promo code is GK20. My initials 20, and that's 20% off. Good deal, right? GK20. Do me a favor and do this, because guess what? They'll know exactly how many people put in the GK discount code, and that's important to me and important to him. So thank you for checking them out. Freedom Fatigues, FREEDOM, freedom, of course. Everybody knows how to spell that. Fatigues. That's not one you spell or hear every day, but it's pretty easy. FATIGUES.com. FreedomFatigues.com. And Chris Vargo, thank you. To be continued, everybody. That's it for now. I'm getting on a plane tomorrow, back to the rat race, and I'm so happy to be going back. All right, talk soon.